Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully, you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron. Turn up and Era day bell shora shahi. All right, it's a moment in the show that I've been looking forward to for a while because it happens in most families. When there's someone kind of famous in the family, you tend to brag about them a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you have anybody famous in your family?
I was named after the most famous one.
Aside from you.
James Buchanan, my middle name, was my great-great, maybe great-uncle.
Right,
he was
right.
One of Queen Victoria's horse guards.
Really?
When she rode around the city, he was one of her bodyguards. That was our biggest claim to fame.
So one of your relatives was a bodyguard to the Queen?
Yeah, Queen Victoria.
That's pretty cool.
It is.
It is.
Sorry, I just...
We've been talking to too many Irish people today. It is!
I just said a potato.
Well, it's a tribute to W.F. Marshall right now, the Bard of Tyrone. I had a great uncle who traced the family roots all the way back to 1694 in Omagh, County Tyrone, Northern Ireland. Probably the most famous of all the Marshalls was William Forbes Marshall, born 1888. He even has a Wikipedia page, just
really?
Like me. Yep.
Which one's longer?
Not touching that one. W.F. Marshall was a Protestant minister, radio broadcaster, and poet. And today we're going to speak with Declan Ford, who some call the new Bard of Tyrone. Declan is a storyteller and aficionado of W.F. Marshall, and he says, I love this quote, by the way.
All right,
I'm a teacher by occupation, a poet by inclination, and a pauper by circumstance. Ladies and gentlemen, the Bard of Tyrone, Mr. Declan Ford. Sir, what's going on over there in Northern Ireland?
Well, it is bucketing out of the heavens, as we say here in our quaint way. Just when I heard you talking about with a bodyguard to Queen Victoria,
yeah,
I can go one better.
Here we go.
My grandfather was in the old RIC, the Royal Irish Constabulary, which is the Irish police force. And he was in the Guard of Honour for King Edward VII when he came over to Ireland in 1907, I think. And my grandfather was the shortest man on parade, and he was 6'4".
Wow.
Wow. That's, hold on, and he was Irish?
Yeah.
He must have been a miner.
But what? I get it now. Yeah, that's funny, right. Tim.
Yeah, okay.
Tim's trying to be funny. Okay, so listen, Declan, I spoke earlier today with Elizabeth Marshall, who lives on the Marshall Homestead.
Uh-huh.
And I said, have you heard of this fella, the new Bard of Tyrone, Declan Ford? And she says, oh, yes. Then she went on and on and on and on about you. I mean, she just prattled on and on and on, saying all sorts of grand stuff about you. How do you feel that you've got so many fans?
Like yourself, Drew, I feel blessed. And it's just as well they can't see us, they just hear us.
I'm sorry, what? What was that last part? Say it again.
I said I feel blessed, but it's just as well they can hear us but not see us.
Oh, yes, okay, that's right, boy. There's something going on with your accent. You is it the Ulster Scot tinge in the accent? What is it about you guys up there?
Well, I think, of course, Irish was our first language, and that was supplanted by England and by the English, and also the major influence at the time of the plantation with the influx from Scotland. And that has created a wonderful blend of phrases that are unique to here. In fact, phrases that would be unique to Tyrone. Like, for example, Tyrone is the only place in the world where a dog could be wild tame.
I'm sorry, a dog can be what?
Wild tame.
Wild tame. Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a couple of girls I used to date.
No, well, I think we are so lucky here because we have so many influences on our speech. And you alluded to the Reverend Marshall. He gave a number of talks on the BBC just after the war, in which he was probably one of the first to really investigate the Scots-Irish or the Ulster-Scots influence. And he took it very, very seriously and actually compiled a dictionary that unfortunately his dog ate part of it. But I think the dictionary is still...
His wild tame dog ate a part of it. Okay, got it.
The dog was a glutton for words.
Oh, man. Too funny. All right. Now, did I hear a guitar in the background? What did I hear?
Oh, you did? Yeah.
What?
That's a guitar.
You know...
It's actually a Canadian...
Is it a, what are those things called?
There's Siegel, there's Simon & Patrick, there's...
What's the French one?
They're all the same company.
Poutine?
No.
La Patrie.
Oh, no, haven't heard of it.
La Patrie.
Right.
Anyway, I was going to do you a poem with a guitar at some stage.
Yeah, but hold on, are you going to sing us a wee ditty, though?
No, I might, I use it as background for the poems.
Oh, I like this.
Do a little bit of singing as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. Mm-hmm. He does everything. Ladies and gentlemen, the new Bard of Tyrone, Declan Ford.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll do a wee piece called Me and Her, and it's in the Ulster vernacular. And a friend of mine was going to Paris with his wife. And we have a townland here, but townland is another name for about three or four fields. And in the townland of Lena, they speak in a very distinct way. They talk like this, they nearly spit the words out. Most unusual. And I said to my good friend Paddy Grugan, I says, Paddy, what's yourself and Kathleen doing at Easter? And he looked at me and he put on his best Lennon. He says, me and her's going to Paris. In other words, my wife and I are going to the capital city of France.
Got it.
And I thought, her, the most valuable thing in a man's life, her, his wife, her, his mommy. Her, his granny. Her, his cow. Her, his bicycle. Me and her. The night I catched her in Gorton, her eyes were twinkling like stars. Had I catched herself on, she told me. But we stepped out. Me and her. Me and her got married in Mountful of a Monday in the middle of May, with a wedding breakfast in Carmen. And we went to Armagh for the day. I had nothing to give her but hardship and me father's farm to share, but she gave me two sons and a daughter with a smile, the spit of her. Be times I never liked her, though I loved her in me own twisted way. Ach, many's the time her nyamun and her chitrin drove me astray. But there was a time me and her laughed together, and we danced to an old fiddle tune. We lay snug together in our wee settled bed, and we threshed by the light of the moon. Her white hair is as soft as the daisies, and her skin's cracked like broken eggshell. Her beads are crocheted through her fingers, and there's nobody here but herself. For she's lying on a bolster of satin, and in her heart there's no longer a stir. And I howl, I'm afeard of the morrow, for that's the end of me and her.
Well done, well done, Declan Ford, the new Bard of Tyrone, doing a wee romantic song there, I think. That was...
Because it's a love song. Yeah. It's a love poem.
Yeah.
You know, a point to true love.
Now, let me ask you, Declan, what part of the house are you in? Can you get anywhere near the Wi-Fi signal, the router?
I am right beside it, actually.
Well, can you look out the window and get that cow to move? Because, no, sometimes it's a bit jumpy. That's no worries. Now, listen, where in Ireland are you exactly?
I am in the County Tyrone, in the heart of the County Tyrone, in the north of Ireland. And not that far from the town of Omagh, about 5 mile or 6 mile from Omagh.
Right.
And I live in a townland called Fernagh, Feornagh, which means a grove of alders. And there are alder trees around here. And townlands, you know, would be named after families or named after places. And there's one, for example, near here called McCullough's Town. And that's because the McCullough family have lived there for generations. So the place becomes representative or reflective of the people or just the physical properties as it has. Could be trees, could be rocks, whatever, you know. Mm-hmm.
Do you consider yourself a redneck? Because a lot of folks from your neck of the woods are sort of country people, you know. Are you a country bumpkin? Are you a redneck?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. You know, I certainly would see myself as very much a countryman. And when I was teaching, you know, in schools, it was very noticeable that you had the townies and the Culchies. And the Culchies was the name that the derogatory name that the townies, the young cubs who lived in town, would call anybody who's outside the town limits. You know, and I taught in Armagh, actually, and Armagh is the ecclesiastical capital of Ireland. And in the city of Armagh, which is two cathedrals, the guys that I taught in Armagh used to look down on the people from Cady. Now, Cady is where the great Tommy Makeham came from. And the people in Cady would look down upon the people from Madden, which was a few miles outside Cady. And I don't know who the people in Madden, which is a little hamlet, who they looked down on. But when the guys from Armagh went to Queen's University in Belfast, the people in Belfast were looking down on them as Culchies. And then when the Belfast people go over to England, they're looked down upon as Paddies, you know. So I think, as Chris Christopherson says, we all need somebody to look down on.
That's right. Well, listen, I think we need to turn this into a bit of a yearly thing. Declan, I would love to have you on the show every St. Patrick's Day special that we have. And I'll have my lawyer send over a contract for you to sign, and you know, we'll make it official.
Yeah, well, my son's a barrister, so he can double check it.
Oh no, I was joking. All right. Well, just before we say goodbye, I need you to do something else. And what I need to hear about. There was a lady over there. I heard a fair bit about her. Her name is Maureen O'Hara. Do you know about her?
Oh, Maureen O'Hara, the great Irish actress. Maureen O'Hara lived in Kerry for about 3 months every year. And she's not that long dead. She was well into her 90s when she died, and they finally gave her an Oscar before she died. And she was a marvellous, marvellous woman with flame red hair. And, of course, she was the star of The Quiet Man. You know the film The Quiet Man, John Wayne?
Yeah.
And I decided to write a poem about Maureen O'Hara, about a man from Oma who falls in love with her. And I actually illustrated it, because I illustrate the poems. And she signed a copy for me. And so I have the only signed version of The Man Who Loved Maureen O'Hara. And when it arrived back from her, my son, who was 18 at the time, and as venal as all 18-year-olds are, I says, Michael, look at this. I says, this is the only one of its kind signed by Maureen O'Hara. And he looked at the poem, and he looked at me, and he said, what age is she? And I said, well, she's well into her 90s. And then you could see the dollar signs flickering in his eyes. He says, when she dies, eBay.
eBay. Oh, fantastic. All right, well, take us out with a bit of this poem here, please, if you don't mind.
This poem. And if any of your listeners write poetry, they'll know that the hardest word in the English language to rhyme with is...
Orange.
Reputedly, orange. Well, when I was writing this poem, I discovered that O'Hara runs a close second. I'll tell you the story of Paddy McCrory, who lived near the foot of our lane. He was a pure holy Tara for Maureen O'Hara and dreaming of being John Wayne. His obsession begun in the year 61 after dandering one evening to town when he juked in from the street to the picture house heat as the rain and the sleet pelted down. There doused in jay's fluid, fleas chomped and fleas chewed as Paddy sucked on a cinnamon sweet. A warm dry and content, it was tuppence well spent, so he settled himself down for a sleep. But he never supposed, as he snuffled and dozed, that his world would soon turn around, for like the prophet of old, he had just travelled the road towards Damascus, towards sweet Omi town. Paddy was jolted awake by a creak in his neck, which snapped him out of a dream, and as he opened his eyes, his jaw fell with surprise as he gazed at the face on the screen. Bewitched and beguiled by her shy, roguish smile, Cupid pricked Paddy's heart with an arrow, that he was swept off his feet in that cinema seat and fell in love with Maureen O'Hara. Clambering home by moonlight, he resolved that cold night to build a shrine to his Hollywood queen. He white washed his grey home and made his own white and worn, painting the door an emerald green. He was a familiar sight on his old tandem bike, traversing the rocks on our lane, as he crowed in his free as loud as could be, in an accent he stole from John Wayne. For 35 years, Packy choked back the tears when he thought of the girl of his dreams. None else could compare with her beauty so rare. He only had eyes for Maureen. At a late evening dance, a lassie hinted romance. Says the redhead, "Will I see you the morrow?" Packy sadly replied, a wistful look in his eye, "Nah, you're nice, but you're no Maureen O'Hara." As he draped his coat over the white marble shoulder of a Madonna in the old ruined church, a storm whistled and blew and soaked Packy through as he shivered in his white cotton shirt. Distant relatives prayed as he lay on his bed, while his life ebbed away like a stream. Tears glistened his eyes as he silently sighed and hoarsely whispered the name, "Maureen." He was buried alone neath a grey granite stone, having ploughed his lonely furrow. Neath this legend and story, here lies Packy McCrory, the man who loved Maureen O'Hara.
So good, so good. Awesome. Oh my goodness. You are a champion, my friend. I got to apologize about stepping over you there with the with chat, and I thought my mic was off. Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. You're hearing from my barrister, son.
Yes, I know. That's funny. That is so good.
Here, Drew, it's been great to chat to you, and I hope you have a sup of the devil's buttermilk, as Ian Paisley would have called it, on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I've started a wee bit early, so thank you. I will. Yes. So good to hear from you. Declan Ford, ladies and gentlemen, the new Bard of Tyrone. What a pleasure, and happy St. Patrick's Day, sir.
Same to you. All the best, Ruth.
Thanks, bye. Mate. Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye. I got to have that guy on more. I feel like such a putz. I just stopped.
He could be like our Irish correspondent. We have a Hollywood correspondent.
Our Irish correspondent. Yeah. Oh, you know, you got to have a little Bing Crosby here too, right? Listen to that. I'm sorry, but if that doesn't tickle your Irish bone, I don't know what will.